Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Tonight, I want every American to know this. We will rebuild. We will recover. And the United States of America will emerge stronger than before.
President Barack Obama speaking before a joint session of Congress this week, pledging that his administration will lead the United States to a full recovery from the worst economic crisis this country has faced since the Great Depression. But is the medicine he proposes worse than the disease? A $787 billion stimulus package, after $750 billion in bank bailout money, and today, the introduction of a budget bill that, according to supporters, lays the groundwork for health care reform, renewable energy, and a competitive America, but according to critics, is top-heavy with pork barrel spending and earmarks. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio, and today on Route 51, it's the battle over the budget as we look at the arguments pro and con over the president's ambitious agenda, and on a state level, Governor Jim Doyle's efforts to retool Wisconsin's budget in the wake of a projected $5.7 billion deficit here. Our guest today, Republican Dan Mielke, a candidate last year for Dave Obey's seat in the 7th Congressional District, joining us live from our Wisconsin Public Radio studio in La Crosse, and by phone, Democrat John Smart, a member of the Park Falls School Board. Now, as always, we want to hear from you, and I'm sure you've got opinions about what's been going on in Washington over the past few weeks. Please give us a call with your questions or comments at 261-6371. That's 261-6371, or toll free 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Well, gentlemen, what I'm going to do, first of all, is play an audio clip which has a portion of President Obama's address to the joint session of Congress and also a portion of Governor Doyle's budget address. And the parallels between the two, I think, are striking.
And tonight, I am grateful that this Congress delivered and pleased to say that the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act is now law. Over the next 2 years, this plan will save or create 3.5 million jobs. More than 90% of these jobs will be in the private sector, jobs rebuilding our roads and bridges, constructing wind turbines and solar panels, laying broadband, and expanding mass transit. Because of this plan, there are teachers who can now keep their jobs and educate our kids. Healthcare professionals can continue caring for our sick. There are 57 police officers who are still on the streets of Minneapolis tonight because this plan prevented the layoffs their department was about to make.
Our choices would be even more difficult without the legislation that President Obama signed in Denver today. The American Recovery and Reinvestment Plan is very important to Wisconsin and every state in our country. Here in Wisconsin, we are able to increase our funding for transportation by 20% in this budget. We will be able to get to work on fixing bridges and roads. We will make sure our cities have clean water. We will connect more of Wisconsin with passenger rail. And we will provide clean alternative energy to power our state. We will modernize our medical records to make patient treatment safer and more efficient. We will make our communication networks stronger and fix our schools. This state will work hard to meet the challenge of this act, to maintain jobs and to get people to work on projects that add long-term value to this state.
That's Governor Jim Doyle in his budget address saying without that stimulus package, Wisconsin would really be in trouble. Doyle saying that it will help build bridges and roads, provide clean water, fix schools, build new rail, alternative energy, modernize medical records, and put people to work. And we heard Barack Obama saying the Recovery Act will create 3.5 million jobs, 90% in the private sector, allow teachers to keep jobs, allow 57 cops in Minneapolis to stay on the beat. And Dan Mielke, what's wrong with all of that?
Where's the money coming from? We're going into debt. The reason we're having the problems today is because we invested money we did not have into projects that we could not afford to pay back. And our solution is to do the very same thing. I have a concern about that. The projects are great if we had the money to do it. But when you take money that you don't have and put a debt load on the American people, that doesn't stimulate. That hurts.
John Smart, your reaction.
This is kind of a standard argument, and I'm kind of a student of the New Deal. I've done a lot of reading about what happened when Franklin D. Roosevelt became president in 1933 and the problems that he faced in the world and in the United States at the time. And essentially, a lot of what President Obama is doing now is following a pattern that was set by FDR. I understand what Dan is saying about the debt. Nobody likes the idea about that. But I also would point out that a lot of the people who are complaining about the debt didn't seem to complain about it very much when it was money that was being spent in Iraq and money that was not going through the regular budget but was done in supplementary appropriations. And we were already $1 trillion in debt to the government or to the war in Iraq long before we started this problem. What we're trying to do now is to resuscitate the economy. And you have to resuscitate the economy by throwing buckets of money on top of it. And I know it sounds crazy, but it's really the only thing that works. John Maynard Keynes, the great English economist, explained all of that very, very clearly back in the 20s and 30s and 40s. And that's essentially the economic pattern that we're following.
You know, that Mr. Putin from Russia was speaking at the World Economic Forum in, I think it's called Davos, Switzerland. And he made put a warning out to the United States, and what he said was that the U.S. should take a lesson from the pages of Russian history and not exercise excessive intervention in economic activity and blind faith in the state's omnipotence. He's concerned. He says, you're following our history, and we failed in that, and that it's not going to work. You need to not try to artificially stimulate it. So, you know, we have history on both sides. We have a prime example of when that was tried in Russia, and it fell apart.
Dan, isn't there a big difference between what happened in Stalinist Russia and what happened under FDR's New Deal? I mean, really, isn't that comparison kind of tenuous on your part?
Well, it depends. Mr. Putin thinks it is exactly what we're doing is what happened in Russia, and he's trying to warn us. We don't have FDR telling us if this is the same thing that was done back then. We need to at least listen and take some concerns on that. You know, taking money that we don't have, and I know Mr. Obama says he's going to tax the top 2%, but I don't care how deep the end of the pool is where you take the water out. When the water goes out, it's always the shallow end that runs dry first, and that's the poor and the middle class are the first ones to feel it. You can't artificially mess with nature in regards to the economy and expect to really turn it around the way we're doing it. There's better options. There's better things that can be done that would not have this drastic effect.
I'm going to go to the phones right now. I planned on talking in more detail about taxes a little bit later in the program, but we do have a caller who wants to talk about taxes now. So we're going to put Kelly on the line. Kelly, your question on Route 51.
My question is, what would be the repercussions of having a flat tax? That means more money in your pocket. Yeah, people may save it for a little bit, but once they, after they get done creating their little nest egg, pump more back into the economy by buying, buying, buying.
John Smart, the argument's pro and con a flat tax, and I imagine as a Keynesian, you've probably got some reservations about that.
I do. If you just look at the idea of a flat tax from the open standpoint that everybody pays the same percentage, yeah, it sounds attractive, except it doesn't really work. And it never has worked. It's been tried. Something similar to it has been tried in many other economies around the world, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work because the people at the bottom, if you're paying, let's say, 10% of your income in taxes, but you only make $10,000 a year, that's a whole lot different than if you make $1 million a year. 10% of that doesn't really amount to a whole lot. Doesn't matter. So the flat tax idea, though it sounds attractive, is really not very attractive. Taxing is an extraordinarily complicated matter, and there are so many different ways that we can approach it. There are regressive taxes and progressive taxes and moderately progressive taxes and moderately regressive taxes. And what we need is essentially an intelligent mix of all of the above. But I don't think a flat tax really makes a great deal of sense.
Dan, what do you think?
No, don't forget the oppressive taxes, too. I'm not a big fan of the flat tax. I am a big, big fan, though, however, of a consumer-based tax like the fair tax.
Yeah, where that's we are what taxed. I'm talking about.
Yeah, the fair tax, I would believe, would be the best way to tax. It does a couple of things. Number one, in order to generate funds, you have to have consumption. You have to have people out there buying. So it tends to change the way Congress looks at doing things and promotes more of a productive society versus the hidden taxes that we have where we're constantly unaware of where these things are coming from and where they're going. I like a more stabilized fair tax. So I would be a strong supporter of that. And I believe that would, in the long run, turn around and benefit the nation as a whole.
John, we're weighing on the...
Excuse me, may I ask what you mean by a fair tax? I've read a lot of different definitions of a fair tax, and I'm curious what you mean by it.
Myself?
Fair tax would be basically what we would do is we'd do away with all taxation everywhere across the board. There'd be no more IRS, but there would be a basic sales tax that goes on goods bought the first time through. In other words, all new goods that are sold in the United States would have a tax based on it, and that your taxes would be paid when you purchase that. Once that item has been purchased, it is now tax-free. It can be resold. It can be remarketed, whether it be a new house or a used car. It's only taxed when it's sold for the first time in a retail market.
But isn't that a regressive concept? Doesn't it hurt the poor more than it hurts the rich? Because
sure
the poor spend more of their income on consumption than the rich do. So you
well,
are actually taxing the people who can least afford to pay taxes.
Well, being a poor person, I would disagree. you do not tax the poor that way. Remember, we still have goodwill. We still have used goods. We still have a lot of ways where those of us who do not have the income that a lot of other people do, we know how to work that, and we know how to get those goods. We may not buy brand new clothes. We may go to Goodwill, but it's not taxable anymore. It's only when it's a new product. I may buy a used car. You very seldom do the poor buy new cars. But those people who do like to travel and do like the items and want things new and fresh, they're going to be paying a greater share of the tax. And so I would disagree with that. If you tax stuff every time it was sold, yes. But under the fair tax system, it's only the new product. It also, there's no taxation for the industry and business. There's no hidden taxes. There's no sin taxes. There's none of these punitive taxes that we have that are only attacking one segment of the population. A lot of the poor people suffer under taxation right now because of the fact that, you know, with the gas taxes and the food, you know, with the situation with some of our luxury taxes in regards to soda pop and chips and different things that are taxable. Those are things that we need to look at.
Kelly, do you have a follow-up? We're going to have to move on. This is taking up awful lot of our time here.
Yeah. Well, no, that's okay, because I would agree with the consumer. That's all.
All right. Very good. Kelly, thanks so much for the phone call. John Smart, Dan Mielke, we're talking about President Barack Obama's budget proposal, his stimulus package, and Governor Jim Doyle's proposal for the Wisconsin budget. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back after this.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
It's the battle of the budget on Route 51 with Republican Dan Mielke and Democrat John Smart. We're looking at some of the proposals President Barack Obama and Governor Jim Doyle are putting forward to try to fix budget problems in a very serious economic time. Gentlemen, we've been talking about taxes, so I think this is probably a good time to play some of the words of President Obama and Governor Doyle on that very subject.
In order to save our children from a future of debt, we will also end the tax breaks for the wealthiest 2% of Americans. Now, let me be clear. Let me be absolutely clear, because I know you'll end up hearing some of the same claims that rolling back these tax breaks means a massive tax increase on the American people. If your family earns less than $250,000 a year, $250,000 a year, you will not see your taxes increased a single dime. I repeat, not one single dime. Not a dime. In fact, the recovery plan provides a tax cut That's right, a tax cut for 95% of working families. And by the way, these checks are on the way.
So I am not going to raise taxes in the way that some have suggested. Some say we should raise the sales tax. I've never done that, and I'm not going to do it now. Or they say we should back off on recently adopted tax cuts for tuition, child care, Social Security, and health insurance. These tax cuts will save middle-class families $360 million over the next 2 years. I worked hard for them with many of you, and I want them to stay. My budget stands up for the people who earn regular paychecks and the people who, through no fault of their own, have lost theirs. This budget calls for taxpayers to pay 1% more on any earnings above $300,000 a year. If you're like 99% of Wisconsin, you won't pay this tax.
So Governor Jim Doyle and President Barack Obama saying that we are going to raise taxes on the wealthiest Americans. And I would just point out that the concept of progressive taxation is a Wisconsin concept going back to Bob La Follette, who proposed it back in the early part of the 1900s. It's also a Republican proposal first advocated by President Teddy Roosevelt at the turn of the last century. Gentlemen, John Smart, Dan Mielke, your reaction to the idea that we are going to be taxing the rich more than they have been taxed recently.
I personally don't buy the arguments that they give. I believe it's a sleight of hands. For instance, with the governor, he doesn't talk about the fact that Murphy Oil up in Superior was in the process of looking into expanding, and they were looking into a $10 billion expansion project. The governor goes up there and talks about the fact that he's going to increase their taxes $500,000 to $1.5 million more in taxes. Murphy Oil's profit margin is a very, very small profit margin. That action shut down at this point temporarily, and hopefully it will only be temporarily, the expansion for Murphy Oil.
Now, the oil surcharge, Dan, is another part of his proposal, along with taking the capital gains tax, going from a 60% exclusion to just 40% and taxing cigarettes. But let's talk about progressive taxation. John, I'd like you to weigh in on this. This is something that's been part of the American system since the turn of the last century. And some would argue that, the top marginal rates could be a lot higher. Under the Eisenhower administration, they were at 90%. 90% top marginal rate, and we still built the interstate highway system. We rebuilt Europe. We turned the U.S. into the world's superpower. We were still turning out plenty of millionaires and rich people. And people look back at the 50s and say, these were the halcyon days, the golden era for America. So, you know, even if the rate goes up to 45%, it's still half of what it was back in the Eisenhower years.
Absolutely.
And no one called him a socialist.
People tend to forget that, and they also tend to think, they don't think in terms of what actually we need. I mean, it's one thing to talk about a fair tax and say, yes, we ought to cut taxes on this and reduce taxes on that and so forth and so on, but we need money in order to function. We need money in order to govern. I think it was Roosevelt who said that taxes are the dues we pay to live in a civilized society, and we do, and it's necessary. I'm on a school board. I know what it costs. I know it, how much it costs. I know how much the costs keep going up and up and up, and we have to find some way to pay for that. As far as corporate taxes, there are corporations that are functioning in the state of Wisconsin that don't pay any taxes at all. And there are all kinds of clever schemes that they have very expensive lawyers that work these things out. And there's a group called the Institute for Wisconsin's Future. If anybody really wants to look into it, they can Google that online and find all kinds of things about that. About our sales tax, for instance, we have among the lowest sales taxes, you know, in the area, and there are a lot of things that are not taxed by our sales tax that could be and maybe should be. You know, shouldn't we have to pay a sales tax when we take our dog to be shampooed and have its toenails cut? There are all kinds of things like that.
The argument goes so that every time
we need to look at the taxation system a lot more carefully than we have been.
The argument goes that every time you tax somebody, every time you tax somebody, you're taking money out of the economy and out of the private economy.
Exactly, and I think, you know, I'm a farmer. I probably think a little differently than a lot of other people, but again, earlier I compared it to a swimming pool in our funds. And you have the poor on the shallow end. They don't have as much funds. And you have in the very deep end, you know, that's the wealthy and they hold the money. I'm not really concerned about where you take the water out. I mean, you can be like Mr. Obama and you can say, well, I'm not going to tax the lower end of the pool. I'm only going to take the money out of the top 2% of the deepest part of that pool. And he's right. But you know what? It's the low end that runs dry first because it's shallow end. And it flows out. You know, the money flow doesn't work the way we think it does. It doesn't just come out of the pockets of the rich. It doesn't just come out of the pockets of the corporations. When you tax a corporation, we pay it within our goods.
Dan, poor
are paying it.
How can you, as a Republican, look back historically on the Eisenhower administration when the top marginal rate was 90% and we still accomplished so many things and America was a superpower, we had plenty of rich people? Doesn't this make all of those arguments really into a lie that a high tax rate on the rich is going to somehow hurt the economy?
No, I do not believe it's that way. I guess the thing is what we do and the fact that we still continue to grow does show what America can do. And Mr. Obama was right. We will get out of this mess sooner or later. It's what type of damage or how long does it take to do that? We can argue that, you know, Eisenhower did that, the progressive tax, and we did just fine. What would have happened if we'd done it the other way? What if we had a fair tax, a consumer-based tax? Would we be better off today? To turn around and look at something and say, because we survived, it was successful, I have a problem with that type of reason.
Dan, we've got to wrap things up. We've got a break for news. If you want to join the conversation, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. We'll be back after this.
Something you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio makes a connection to an idea that's important in your life. If you need more information, chances are you'll find it on our website, wpr.org, at your service on the web.
We are back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today we are talking about money, lots of money. The battle over the budget in Washington, D.C. and in Madison as President Barack Obama and Governor Jim Doyle try to find solutions to a big economic mess. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. We have competing points of view today. We have Dan Mielke, a Republican, a former candidate for Congress in the 7th Congressional District, joining us live from our Wisconsin Public Radio studio in La Crosse. And we also have John Smart, a Democrat from Park Falls, who is a member of the Park Falls School Board. I want to pick up on this conversation about taxing and the relative argument over what's known as Keynesian economics. And I want to do that by playing the words of two Wisconsin congressmen with very different views of the current economic situation and what the best way out of it is. First of all, we're going to hear from Dave Obey, the incumbent in the 7th District, recorded at an appearance at UW-Marathon County last week. And then we're going to hear from Republican Paul Ryan on the floor of the U.S. Congress in Washington.
I think it was hysterical opposition, not historic. And I think they have simply made a strategic decision that they want Obama to have full ownership of everything that happens, and so they will find any excuse they can not to cooperate. Yes, this is a big package, but you don't shoot a grizzly bear with a BB gun. I mean, I'm a Keynesian. I believe in Keynesian economics. Keynesian economics teaches you that when the economy is sagging, you pump money into the economy, and then when the economy is going full bore, then the government should be cutting back on what it does so that it doesn't create inflation in a full employment economy. But if you always did nothing because you were afraid of what would happen down the road, we'd wind up doing nothing. And right now, as FDR said, we need action and we need action now.
This bill This economic stimulus package is unworthy of our new president's signature. Even if you are a devout Keynesian who believes that we can borrow and spend our way to more jobs and higher prosperity, this bill doesn't even meet that standard. The Congressional Budget Office is telling us that less than 10% of the money even gets spent in 2009. 2009 is the time where constituents are losing jobs, where factories are closing, where we're worried about the economy. On the tax side, the rebates in this bill amount to $10 a week for an individual or $20 a week for couples. Do we think we're going to turn the economy around by giving people 10 bucks a week?
Paul Ryan, a Republican, Dave Obey, a Democrat, two very different views of the economy and the way out of the current mess. Dan Milkey, you ran against Dave Obey. He says you can't shoot a grizzly with a BB gun.
Well, he's the sugar daddy of sugar daddies, I guess. He thinks he can do it by buying everybody toys and spending money that we don't have. He's right, but we're not shooting grizzly bears with BB guns. We're shooting them with blanks, and that's the fact that we don't have the money. We're borrowing it. Since George Washington to Ronald Reagan, it took that long to get our first $1 trillion in debt. Dave Obey's stimulus bill, not Obama's, because this is the one that Dave Obey and Nancy Pelosi put together. That stimulus bill has put us $1 trillion in debt in 1 week. It took all of Congress for 200 and some years to create that big of a debt. Dave Obey did it in 1 week. There's a problem there. We're now looking at almost a $4 trillion debt or a spending bill this year. And I know they talk about the idea of pumping money into it. If we had money to pump into the economy, the people would do it. But to borrow money that doesn't exist or to pay, you know, to print phony money or extra money does not do the thing that he's talking about.
John Smart, are we trying to buy a recovery with monopoly money?
No.
Basically.
And we're not, no, and we're not printing money. We're borrowing money, and that's unfortunate, but that's the fact. We are borrowing money primarily from China because they're the only ones who have any right now. And that's Keynesian economics. That's what we were talking about before. That's how this works. I should point out to Dan, too, that this great deficit that he's talking about, this enormous debt, really was compiled primarily by the Reagan and Bush administrations. We didn't have any vast debt before that. I talked before about the fact that the debt for the Iraq war is going to be well in excess of $1 trillion. That also was borrowed. That also was not money that was raised by any normal means of taxation and so forth. No, I understand all that. But the idea of Keynesian economics is that you borrow money when you need to borrow money in order to make the economy recover and get back to functioning normally. And that's essentially what this bill does. The bill that Congressman Obey worked on, that President Obama pushed, the bill that our two senators, Feingold and Cole, supported, and in fact everybody supported. If you want to look at it, from a purely political standpoint, after all, it was the Bush administration that put us in the situation that we're in now, which is why the Bush administration and the Republican Party, essentially, were so thoroughly trounced in the last election, because the American people wisely thought whatever they're doing now is not working, and we need to try something else.
Dan, it seems like
I'm reminded of something that FDR said. He basically was willing to try anything. And he told his people, his staff, his cabinet, everybody else, he said, we'll try this. If it doesn't work, we'll throw it out and we'll try something else. But we're going to keep trying something until the economy starts to buck up. A lot of what's coming out of the Republican Party these days sounds exactly like what came out of the Republican Party during Hoover's time, and it didn't work then either.
John made a good point there. He said that Bush is doing what we're doing, and people voted him out of office. And I will agree. I am not in favor of what Bush did. I don't like the last bailout that we just did. I was opposed to that, too. And I was ashamed of Republicans that voted for that. The situation is correct, though. What Bush has been doing that has got him thrown out of office, basically, you know, in a sense, not thrown out of his last term, but that got him the lack of popularity is the very thing that Mr. Obama is doing. He's repeating history, and I would say we need to do something different than what Mr. Bush and Mr. Obama did.
Dan, I recall the election in the campaigning. We had two candidates. We had John McCain, who railed against pork barrel spending, said he was going to name names, said he was going to cut the budget, balance the budget, and we had Barack Obama, who said he was going to spend money. He was going to provide for universal health care. He was going to invest money in new energy. He was going to invest money in education. I mean, he said that to the point where some of McCain's supporters called him a socialist. And he won the election. He won
the
election.
That is correct.
So isn't he just doing right now what the American people elected him to do?
Actually, what I would say is, in general, is Mr. Obama came in with hope. He offered people hope. He didn't really lay out what he was going to do in detail as far as his spending. I don't think the people saw the $4 trillion budget or the spending that he's going to do this year. What they saw was a man that's going to do something different than Mr. Bush. And I'm afraid he's not doing something different than Mr. Bush. He talks about taxing the top 2% of the people. But, you know, if I'm not mistaken, the top 2% of the people only make $1.4 trillion total in a year. So how do you get $4 trillion out of only one? You'd have to tax them 100% 4 years in a row to be able to get the money back that he's trying to pull out of these top 2%.
John Smart, was the entire... Was Barack Obama's candidacy a stealth candidacy? I mean, was he not leveling with the American people when he was campaigning?
No, he was leveling with the American people. What he said was, we're going to restore the strength of the American independent economy, and that's essentially what he's doing. The economy will repair itself if we can get it up and running again, and that's
Amen.
What this is all really all about. And I think that it's now time. The American people, as I said, in November, the American people spoke. They decided that they didn't want to have what was going on the last 8 years. They wanted something different and new. And the same thing is true in the state of Wisconsin. They support Governor Doyle, and they support the state legislature, and they gave the Democrats control of the assembly because it's time for a change. Now, I will also add to that, that the Democrats are now in total control. We control the White House and the Congress, we control the governor's office, and we control the legislature. It is now time for us to put up or shut up. It's time for us to make the necessary changes or else quit and lose in the next election. That's how it works. That's how American democracy works. But I think at this point, to cavil and complain about things that the government is doing, is kind of beside the point. We need to try something, and we need to try what we're doing.
2616371 or 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation, we've got Republican Dan Mielke and Democrat John Smart talking about President Barack Obama and Governor Jim Doyle's budget solutions for our current economic crisis. It certainly has not erased the partisan divide in Washington these first few weeks of the Obama administration. I'm going to play a short portion of Bobby Jindal, Governor Jindal of Louisiana's response to Barack Obama after he gave his address to the joint session of Congress.
Republicans put forward plans to create jobs by lowering income tax rates for working families, cutting taxes for small businesses, strengthening incentives for businesses to invest in new equipment and to hire new workers, and stabilizing home values by creating a new tax credit for home buyers. These plans would cost less and create more jobs. But Democratic leaders in Congress, they rejected this approach. Instead of trusting us to make decisions with our own money, they passed the largest government spending bill in history, with a price tag of more than $1 trillion with interest. While some of the projects in the bill make sense, their legislation is larded with wasteful spending. It includes $300 million to buy new cars for the government, $8 billion for high-speed rail projects such as a magnetic levitation line from Las Vegas to Disneyland, and $140 million for something called volcano monitoring. Instead of monitoring volcanoes, what Congress should be monitoring is the eruption of spending in Washington, D.C. Democratic leaders say their legislation will grow the economy. What it will do is grow the government, increase our taxes down the line, and saddle future generations with debt. Who amongst us would ask our children for a loan so we could spend money we do not have on things we do not need? That is precisely what the Democrats in Congress just did. It's irresponsible.
John Smart, not one Republican vote in Congress for that stimulus package, and Bobby Jindal says what the Democrats did was irresponsible.
Yeah, isn't that funny? There are a number of things. First of all, Bobby Jindal was really kind of embarrassing. That whole business, for instance, about the rail line from Las Vegas to Disneyland is garbage. It's not in the bill. It's not in anything. Somebody just made that up. What I don't really understand is that the National Republican Party seems to have decided that they are simply going to say no. They're going to say no to everything. And essentially what they're banking, and for purely political reasons, there are a lot of Republicans, including Governor Crist of Florida and Governor Schwarzenegger in California and a lot of others, who are saying, you know, we need to go along with the administration and try this. It may not all work, but we've got to try it. We don't have any other real choice. But the National Republican Party has decided that they're simply going to say no, no matter what. They're going to say no. And basically, to be really blunt, what they're basing this on is that if it fails, they can use that to run against the Democrats in the next election. But what if it succeeds? That's going to leave them really out in the cold. And I don't understand this kind of cold calculation. I find it offensive, actually.
Dan Milkey, have the Republicans become the Republicants?
Well, in this case, I guess it's an awkward situation. I was opposed to the Republicans when they tried to do the bailout last fall. So I was a Republican even when Republicans were doing it. I think one of the biggest problems we have, and Mr. Obama in his speech said a lot of good things, and I was encouraged by that, but I think one of the major failures that Mr. Obama has done is he thinks somehow Congress is going to be the watchdog of our money. He's going to be the in charge of the chicken coop. And believe me, Congress is the fox in the chicken coop. It's not the one that's going to protect it. And that's Republicans and Democrats alike. Both sides have been guilty of earmarks and pork barrel spending. And that's a problem that has to stop. Whether it's a rail line, whether it's some mice in California, whether it's some other pork barrel spending, this stimulus bill had a lot of spending in there that really wasn't trying to get jobs to people. It wasn't just trying to take care of financial crises. They were throwing in the pork for their special interest groups. And that happens on both sides. Both sides are guilty, and it needs to stop.
Now, Dave Obey argued pretty vociferously in favor of what you might call pork barrel spending or earmarks during the budget debate over just the last couple of weeks. What he said, Dan, is according to the Constitution, Congress has the authority and the sole authority to spend money. And earmarks, that's how they do it, because who better than a person, a congressman from a local district, to know what projects need to be funded? So he said if you take out earmarks, what you're basically saying is only the White House and anonymous bureaucrats would make every spending decision.
Maybe it'd be easier to say we need more responsible congressmen to make responsible decisions so that earmarks aren't a fiasco and an embarrassment to this nation. There's too much spending there. We have a problem with it, and it needs to stop. Mr. Obey, yes, he likes his earmarks. That's why I refer to him as a sugar daddy. That's how politicians get reelected, is because they somehow buy their votes through special perks and helping people out. But there needs to come a time when we have responsible people in Congress, both on the Democratic side and Republican side, that says we need to look at our budget and we need to look at what we have, what we can afford, and what we can do, and do what's best for the nation rather than trying to purchase votes for the next election. We need to quit looking at the next election and look at the job at hand and do it.
261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. We're talking about President Barack Obama and Governor Jim Doyle and their budget solutions. You've got about 9 minutes to join the conversation if you've got a question or comment. I'm Glenn Moberg. We'll be back after this.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We have Democrat John Smart and Republican Dan Milkey with us talking about President Barack Obama and his most recent address to the nation. And we also have one more clip to play for you. This is what both Governor Doyle and Barack Obama said about the subject of health care.
This budget does not back away from the gains we have worked so hard to achieve in health care coverage. We are not going to start telling the 70,000 kids who enrolled in Badger Care Plus this year, that because the economy is bad, they can't see a doctor anymore. We have made Wisconsin a national leader in access to basic, affordable health care coverage. That's not an achievement we can let go of because times are tough.
We must have quality, affordable health care for every American. It's a commitment that's paid for in part by efficiencies in our system that are long overdue. And it's a step we must take if we hope to bring down our deficit in the years to come. Now, there will be many different opinions and ideas about how to achieve reform. And that's why I'm bringing together businesses and workers, doctors and healthcare providers, Democrats and Republicans, to begin work on this issue next week. I suffer no illusions that this will be an easy process. Once again, it will be hard. But I also know that nearly a century after Teddy Roosevelt first called for reform, the cost of our health care has weighed down our economy and our conscience long enough. So let there be no doubt. Health care reform cannot wait, it must not wait, and it will not wait another year.
And President Obama says it will not wait. In fact, he is putting out, I believe it's $634 billion in what's being called a reserve health care fund in order to pave the way for what may become universal health care. And nobody expects that that is going to happen without a fight. John Smart, do you think that fight is necessary?
I think it's inevitable. I think that the United States inevitably will have a national health care program because we are the only major industrialized nation left in the world that doesn't have one. And it's causing all kinds of problems with all kinds of businesses, including our automobile industry. Part of the reason that they can't compete on an international market anymore is because the cost of medical care in the United States has just gotten out of hand. And they can't any longer support that. This is something that we all are going to have to face. I've spent a lot of time in my life traveling and working in other countries around the world, and I was talking to somebody the other day reminded of a story in, when I was working in Sweden, and I was talking to, I was visiting a family, and I was talking to a young man who had just graduated from high school, and he wasn't sure what he was going to do. And he was talking about all the things that, the options that were open to him, and he was talking about the fact that he didn't have to worry about paying tuition because that the government took care of that. He didn't have to worry about his health care or his pension because the government took care of that. What he wanted to do was to go into college and study something that would actually be able to allow him to help his fellow citizens.
Dan, Dan, should we be following Sweden's lead and have some form of universal health care?
You know, I'm in favor of affordable health care. I'm not in favor of government-run or government-based health care. I don't believe that's affordable. So while Mr. Obama and I agree that we need to really focus on affordable health care, we disagree on how to accomplish that. Putting health care in the hands of our Congress or our government that has historically never done anything affordable is a foolish idea. To find ways to bring our health care costs down, that I'm in favor of. Taking the money out of my pocket, putting it in the government's pocket, taking a portion of that back to buy the health care is not affordable health care. It's just hiding where the money's coming from. And there's a problem with that. And when you get to, you know, we just had a situation with Mr. Obama saying with the banks, we are going to oversee these banks to make sure that they do it wisely. Well, wait till they start to oversee the doctors and make sure they treat us wisely. They'll be directing us what our, like they direct salaries for the bank chairman. They'll be directing us as to when we go to the doctor, what we do, when we take it.
John Smart will
keep the budget tight.
Will universal health care?
That was Mr. Bush that said he would take care of the banks, remember?
Will universal health
care? Obama just recently said it too.
Excuse me, gentlemen. John, will universal health care put a bureaucrat between every individual patient and his or her doctor?
All I can say about that, as I said before, is that universal health care is inevitable. It is going to happen because we are the only country in the world where it is not happening, the only major country in the world where it is not happening, and it will. And we'll figure out a way to make it an American kind of program and one that actually works for the benefit of all our citizens. When it will happen, I can't tell you, but it's going to happen.
And being the last man on board of a sinking ship is not necessarily good.
We're going to leave it at that. Dan Milkey, a Republican who ran against Dave Obey for Congress. John Smart, a Democrat who sits on the Park Falls School Board. Thank you both for being with us today, and we could talk for another 2 hours, I think.
Thank you very much. And John, say hi to your brother for me.
Will do.
And gentlemen, a lot of this seems to come down to how much you trust the government and what do you view the government as being there for. Is the government something that is different from the people and often a threat to your independence and your liberty? Or in America, is the government the representative of the people? And I don't think we're going to have an answer to that this afternoon. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
Republican Dan Milkey, former candidate for Congress, joining us from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in La Crosse, and by telephone, Democrat John Smart of the Park Falls School Board. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer and our on-air producer, Rick Ryer. And also a big thank you to John Gatto, technical director from our Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse Bureau at WHLA and WLSU. Thanks also to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Our special musical selection today was from Pink Floyd. Route 51 can be heard every Thursday at 5 p.m. on the Ideas Network stations WLBL 91.9 FM Wausau, 930 AM Auburndale Stevens Point, WHBM 90.3 FM Park Falls, and WHRM 90.9 FM High Definition Channel 2. Thanks again for riding with us today. Until next week, we are heading out of town.